Mr. Chairman, I bring for your consideration today Senate Bill 9. My name is Senator Lou Jones from Conrad, Montana. Senate Bill 9 does a number of items, and I'll hand out a sheet. I hope I have enough copies. Well, I know I don't have enough copies, but folks can look going up both directions. At least a little bit of what's going on. So Senate Bill 9 is a bill that's a companion that's moving along with our mini House Bill 2. And so it effectively does several deals that are related to the accounts in House Bill 2 or mini 2. It creates a state special revenue account in case the executive chooses to act upon CoreCivic. And it also requires that the first $15 million, we have a general estimate of what might happen with CoreCivic. We don't know an exact amount. It's an executive negotiation. But we do know that the estimates have talked about a number around $30 million. So the first $15 million of this is actually going to, if this deal were to be taken, would be deposited in the fire fund. And the other $15 million of it would be deposited or 15 or whatever amount beyond 15. Anything beyond the $15 million that goes to the fire fund would be deposited in a state special revenue account, which was part of the account that was created in Mini 2 here just a little bit of time ago. The money there would then, it speaks to the money that goes into that account. It would be, the suggestion is that it's used for the most vulnerable populations. That's listed right in the bill. For families, children, seniors with disabilities, and to allow a continuum of care for those folks. We suggest, again, it's going to be the executive's discretion. We suggest that it's to go to those areas if he chooses to act upon this deal. And so that's the first part of the bill. It speaks to this possibility. It speaks to where it goes, and we move from there. It also speaks to the fact that if this $15 million does not occur, then of course there has to be some money in the fire fund. It says, well, then you get to transfer $15 million from the general fund to the fire fund in order to achieve the amount that's in there to fight fires. It also is the trigger bill. We talked some this morning about rebuild triggers. And so in the bill, it speaks to the fact that in the event that money comes in high, that basically the executive has a forecast, his budget forecast going forward. It speaks to what our revenues in this state will be the end of June next year, right? That's when we can prove up. That's when our fiscal year ends. It'll actually be after that, just as it was this year, when we'll know actual amounts. And there is a forecast by the executive of what will happen based on his revenue estimate. This bill simply says this: look, no one's 100% perfect, but if you are within, it gets about a $20 million wash, which sadly on our budget is a small number. It gives a $20 million window, but if money comes in more than $20 million higher than the estimate by the executive, then it begins a process of an unwind and a savings. And effectively, it simply says, look, we're going to unwind where the cuts occurred in the various agencies, and it's going to unwind until their silo, if the money came in huge and there was sufficient money, it would simply unwind the silos back full. It would fill them right back up. Dollar goes to the unwind, dollar goes to the stabilization reserve, dollar goes to the unwind, dollar goes to our rainy day reserve. And so a dollar for dollar shares between a full unwind and between the stabilization reserve. And so it touches upon that as well. It's a full unwind bill. That's actually in Section 5. It also recognizes that this, and there's as we've moved some information in what I'm going to call the mini two. They don't actually agree it's a very mini two, but it's kind of been my nickname for it. The two that you just took executive action on. It also recognizes that this represents an appropriation of the executive cuts. It's an appropriation of the transfers we've worked on to try to solve this problem with the executive. And ultimately, it speaks to the fact that if items in this then are vetoed, line item vetoes out, they're taken out, that's within the executive's prerogative. He certainly can remove stuff just like he does from the main two. However, if you take items out, for instance, you decide not to take a bill or you decide to change something, then it simply adjusts the ending fund trigger by that amount. So the solution is held whole. So this is the trigger bill, the unwind bill, and it provides a mechanism in the event the executive chooses to act upon CoreCivic. It does not say he has to. It simply provides a mechanism if he chooses to. And so that's probably a quick summary of the bill. There are a couple sections in it now where there's going to, like so many of these bills that we're working on fairly quickly, that are going to require amendments. There'll be three or four amendments to clarify some stuff in the bill. But that does, for instance, one of the amendments is that the fire bill, the bill we had when we began this process, we thought there would probably be a fire assessment bill that did assessments across the state. This bill would have had to coordinate that. Since there's not a fire assessment bill, this then it has to be deleted or an amendment to remove that reference in this bill. So with that, I will sit down, listen to proponents, opponents, and answer questions, potentially with the help of the staff, since this is a fairly new bill out. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Jones. Can I have a show of hands of proponents for Senate Bill 9? Opponents for Senate Bill 9. Okay, we're going to move through these three bills fairly rapidly. We have a long night's work ahead. The hour is late, so on this bill, we'll let the proponents and opponents testify within reason. On future bills, we're going to have to ration and budget our time. We want to hear from everybody, but people are going to have to be succinct, so start thinking about that. Are there proponents to Senate Bill 9? Proponents. Seeing none, are there opponents?
Mr. Vice Chairman, members of the committee, Dan Villa, Governor Bullock's budget director. Honoring your wishes, the hour is late. I'm just going to have to express disappointment. I didn't think this is how we did business. I didn't think that questioning constitutional rights of the governor, that if you dare exercise your right, these things happen to Montanans. I didn't think that's how we did business. And I've known the chairman since 2005, when he and Senator Sesso and many of us first raised our hand and took the same oath all of you did. I'm not going to waste your time going through the details and the drafting errors and the problems where state agencies are allocated tables based on assessments. I'm just going to say I'm disappointed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Director. Are there further opponents?
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. S.K. Rossi, Director of Advocacy and Policy at the ACLU of Montana. I wasn't going to stand up and oppose this bill. If you want to know why the ACLU opposes any involvement with CoreCivic, especially when it comes to incentivizing a contract extension, you can check our Facebook and our Twitter. CoreCivic has a long and very well-documented history of prisoner abuse, of understaffing, of riots, of escapes, of a multitude of other transgressions. The possibility of accepting $30 million in order to extend their contract is something that the state of Montana should move away from. We're also disappointed that it's even being considered, and we hope you reject the bill. Thanks.
Thank you. Are there further opponents?
Good evening. George Wolcott, that's W-O-L-C-O-T-T, and I represent Forward Montana. We're an organization that works with youth and politics and advocates for their interests. I would just like to identify myself with the comments of the budget director and of the ACLU. We're particularly concerned about the way in which private prisons treat young natives in Montana, and we are frustrated with the incentivization of the deal that the legislature is moving towards. Thank you.
Further opponents.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Heather O'Loughlin, spelled O apostrophe L O U G H L I N, with the Montana Budget and Policy Center, and we do rise in opposition of Senate Bill 9. I have a number of questions, probably more questions than I do at this point than comments, but I do want to raise one concern that we have related to what the sponsor has indicated as far as how the quote-unquote rebuild would occur. So Senate Bill 261, which passed in the legislative session, established the Budget Stabilization Fund. Both these committees heard that bill. And there was a number of conversations and debate and amendments throughout the process on how deposits would be made into that fund. And at the end of the day, these committees decided to alter the way those deposits were made and look at trends of revenue growth over a six-year period. That was the recommendation that came from the Pew Center that came here to testify, and it is a best practice of when it makes sense to make deposits into the Budget Stabilization Fund. What this bill is doing is taking funds, any excess revenue in this next year, and taking half of it and depositing it into the Budget Stabilization Fund. And we're facing a time when we're seeing a downturn in revenue, and House Bill 2, which is now in your consideration and that you just passed, will deeply impact the base of the budgets, and you are taking now some revenue away from being able to rebuild those budgets. And not just the governor's authority to do that, but your authority to do that in the next legislative session by depositing funds into the Budget Stabilization Fund. That fund makes a lot of sense in the long run. We support a rainy day fund. But there are times when you want to be depositing money into that fund and times when it makes sense to ensure that you've got it in the general fund so that you can restore the cuts that are being made. So that is our biggest concern. I do have a lot of questions. I think at least the version that was online still includes what appears to be just a note on page 6, line 12, that just says table. And I'm not sure, maybe there's an updated version that I don't have online. But we do have some questions about kind of how this bill would interplay with some of the other decisions that you're making. So for that, we'd recommend a no vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further opponents? Seeing none, are there informational witnesses? Seeing none, are there questions from the committee? Representative McCarthy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the sponsor, please.
Senator Jones.
Chairman, Representative.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Jones. Just so I'm kind of clarifying what's going on and wrap some things up, it's been a long day, but we started off talking earlier this morning about we're going to amend House Bill 2, which would give us a new permanent base that includes all these cuts. You stated at that time that we had an opportunity to unwind that base, and I'm looking at it right now, and it appears to me that in order to unwind the base and refill some of those programs that are being cut, that I also have to accept that we're going to extend the contract of the private prison. Is that it? Am I reading that correctly, or if you wouldn't mind clarifying?
Absolutely not. The unwinding of the cuts is linked to revenues coming in be above the budget director's estimate. The private prison dollars don't do anything. They're his to do with from his orange box as he chooses. We merely recommend it. that they go to Health and Human Services. The unwind of the cuts is linked to revenue, extra revenue.
Follow-up? So, Senator Jones, if we pass this bill, then we are under no obligation to extend that contract?
You are under no obligation to do anything. It's an executive contract. Now, if this bill were to pass, there are things that would occur if you extended the contract. There would be $15 million deposited in the fire fund to help fight future fires, and anything in the contract beyond $15 million would be available for the executive to dispose of as he sees fit, with our suggestion that he helps the most vulnerable among us. That suggestion is fairly clearly laid out on the second page of the bill. The most vulnerable populations, to families, children, seniors, and individuals with disabilities. So we suggest he uses it for that. But we're not the executive. We're just allowing him an option to do so if he would choose to do this.
Thank you.
Representative Woods.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor.
Chairman, Representative.
Thank you, Senator. I'm not going to touch on my objections to private prisons. I'd like to focus, although they're deep. As I see it, we're kind of getting handcuffed into a deal here. And my question is, since we're getting handcuffed into this deal, what does this do to the state's negotiating position in buying this facility? I mean, we're basically saying, okay, we're going to do this prior to the negotiating, and where does that put us in negotiating with CoreCivic? They have us by the...
If you see anywhere in this bill that it mandates that the executive negotiate with anybody, this bill suggests that if a negotiation were to occur, this is what would happen with the money. If a negotiation doesn't occur, there is no money for anything to happen to. So this allows an option. It doesn't say that the executive has to take the option. It doesn't require the length of the contract. It doesn't require anything. It suggests there's an option.
Follow up. As I see it, though, what the bill does is it takes money that is deposited into this account and uses it, which, to my mind, then obligates us to either refill that $15 million or $32 million with funds from somewhere else to renegotiate this contract or to buy this out. Am I wrong there?
It certainly provides the executive the option to take this deal. And if provides him a way out if he doesn't take the option, he has an option. He can certainly take the deal. He can choose to adjust his ending fund rebuild, or he can do additional cuts, I guess. He has options. But he certainly is under no obligation to take the deal. Or did we ever speak to the negotiation in any manner? I suggest he do an outstanding job and do a great job for the state of Montana.
Representative Glimm.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Question for Ms. McLaughlin.
Ms. McLaughlin.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Glimm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. McLaughlin, during your testimony, you referenced a revenue downturn. Would you be surprised to know that revenue is up over last year?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Glimm, so what I meant was revenue coming in below projections. So what the legislature projected in HJ2, revenue came in $75 million below what was projected.
Thank you. But it is up over last year.
Further questions from the committee? Representative Ellis.
Mr. Chairman, a question for the sponsor.
Senator Jones.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ellis.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Jones, one of the things that I'm concerned about is because this bill is fairly complicated and we are moving quickly, there can be mistakes made. And one of the things that's kind of confusing to me is on page 6, line 12, where there's a reference to a table that doesn't even appear in the bill. And it seems like it's a mistake that's somewhat significant, and I just wondered what was going on.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I believe I spoke to you. There would be a series of amendments that will clarify any of the areas that are not here in this bill. And so prior to taking executive action on this bill, those folks that are going to vote on it will be able to see all the amendments and all the pieces that as they're brought up to face. Because you are correct, it is moving quickly, which has meant that a lot of the components of this deal across of all these bills have required some effort. But that's what they brought us back to down to two. The executive had the opportunity to cure this under 17-7-140. If he did not wish input from the legislature, he merely had to not call a session.
Follow up. Mr. Chairman, Senator Jones, is the expectation, or do you know if the expectation is to vote on this bill tonight? I realize it's a Senate bill and I'm a House member, but I know the hour is late, and to understand amendments to a complicated bill at this hour doesn't seem fair if it's happening tonight.
Certainly, I can respect that it doesn't seem fair. I'm not sure the amendments will be here on time. If they are all here, we certainly may take action on this bill. But if they're not, we may not take action on this bill.
Representative Patelis.
Mr. Chairman, question for the sponsor. Senator Jones, just out of curiosity, throw the $30 million out. Forget about that. What would we do if we would not negotiate with the private prison with the overflow of our inmates? What would we do with them?
So with your leeway, Mr. Chairman?
I was going to say, Representative, that's not directly germane to the bill, but I'll allow a little bit of leeway very briefly.
Okay. Yeah, because my goal is not going to be to debate the private prison. I respect everybody's position on that. But if you're asking just a numeric question relative to the number of folks in the system in Montana, not only is the system in Shelby, Montana, the private prison in this full, it's triple bunked in a number of areas. The majority of our holds are full. There are challenges across our entire system on the ability to hold and deal with challenges of people. So we have a challenge today. We are looking at some of the folks in this room have worked on some very positive reforms, but right now we have some significant challenges with holds.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Representative Cuff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Without delving into the argument of private versus public prisons, there has been talk of if it were sold or not sold. The $30 million, Mr. Senator Jones, as I understand it, that would represent a down payment on possible future purchase. Is that what that fund was gathered for?
I understand, Mr. Chairman. I understand that this at a certain level. But yes, I believe that in the event the state were to take a different tact and wish to acquire, again, we're kind of off tact here, but wish to acquire this prison, then the prison, that area would need to be appraised. And that in to the extent that the amount exceeded the value in represented here, the 30 million-ish number, then it would need to, we would have to bond for or come up with additional money. It would have to be appraised. And I'm not suggesting it would exceed it or not exceed it. That's just a process.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's what I wanted to clarify, was that there could be future payments if we did not move forward with something.
Thank you, Representative. Further questions from the committee? Senator McNally.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a clarification from the sponsor, I hope. Mr. Chair and Senator Jones, I'm a little confused. I got this handout, the explanation. And number four on the first section talks about...
One second. Let me locate it before you speak to it.
Okay. Under section one, if, you know, we get money from heaven... And it's recommending that the money be used for essential services, number four there, and it talks about that. And then number five says it cannot be used to increase an appropriation beyond the original appropriation in House Bill 2 as introduced in this special session. They seem contradictory to me, aren't you?
So explain to me what you're seeing in number four that's...
It's a suggestion that if, you know... Over the $15 million, you know, some of the money could be used for essential services. But then the number five says, but you can't increase an appropriation. And it seems like that's...
So, Mr. Chairman, I get the question now.
Yeah, thank you.
If the revenue comes in higher, number five speaks to a revenue coming in higher.
Right.
What that simply says is on that area, the silos, if I see appropriations as silos and we're coming in short, you can't overfill the silo. You can't change the base in an area using this. If they chose to do additional spending with the what I call the orange box, the box associated with Core Civic, you could spend it there, but you're not going to be able to change the base appropriation beyond. If I'm unwinding cuts, I can't unwind cuts beyond the level of the original silo. I can only, if the glass was 8 foot tall and it went down six with cuts, I can take it back up to eight. I can't change the appropriation beyond what the original level was. If the executive were to use the orange box to do additional items in an area, they certainly could, but they're not going to be able to change the appropriation in that area.
To follow up, just so you're...
The base stays. The maximum base is the base that originally came in. So this would unwind the base, but it would not change it. It would not... You would not be able to achieve a higher base. We're an appropriation committee. We appropriate at a level. It's never been within the executive purview to change our appropriations to a number beyond what we appropriated.
I understand that, but just to follow up, the original appropriation is the first House 2 bill before the one you just passed, or is it the one you just passed?
The as introduced, none of the amendments were applied, correct? So the mini House Bill 2 as introduced represented the House Bill 2 that we left the session with, correct? With just the coordination bills hooked into it. So as introduced into this session, the House Bill 2 that existed is effectively the introduced version we left the session with. These amendments dropped it.
Right.
Correct? Is that?
Yep. Thanks.
Further questions? Seeing none, Senator Whitford.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for the sponsor.
Senator?
So when is the contract up on this prison?
I believe it is June of 2019.
2019? So why does it say in your title renegotiation?
So in my title, you're requesting a... Because if you're making a deal prior to a contract being up, it's a negotiation, a renegotiation. Again, he doesn't have to do it. This simply says if he chooses to enter into a negotiation that we're all aware of, that was offered to him, this is how the money will handle. If he chooses not to, nothing happens. So all we're speaking about is appropriating money that may come into existence if he chooses to enter into this, if the executive chooses to do this. Doesn't tell him what level to choose. In fact, the $15 million that was selected on that to be directly applied to fires was selected small for a reason. So that it, and it says 15 million, we know the amount's going to be some number north of 15 million, and then we suggest he get as much, as good a deal as he can, and put it in his orange box and do the best job he can with it. Now, if he doesn't do anything, he doesn't do anything. That's entirely within the executive purview. He's a person that signs contracts.
Further questions from the committee? Representative Kanoki.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the sponsor.
Senator Representative Kanoki.
Mr. Chair, Senator Jones. So I sit on the Child Family Services Interim Committee, and when these cuts were proposed by the governor's office, there was many people that thought they were dramatic and draconian. $76 million of cuts. $49 million of that $76 million, so 65%, were from the Department of Health and Human Services, as you know. They have a federal match, which actually means the cuts to the department were $111 million. You can make an argument that it was disproportionately put into the Department of Health and Human Services. So what we've done in this special session, and I'm looking for guidance for you. You haven't seen the amendments. You can't speak to it. But we have a coalition of providers. And one of the big frustrations on the Child and Family Services was people in the community providing services to the most vulnerable did not feel like they had a say in the governor's cuts. So we have a coalition of the Montana Healthcare Association, Montana Association of Community Disability Services, Disability Rights Montana, the Montana Dental Association, Independent Living Project, Psychological Association, you go down the list, there's 11 that have identified the most draconian cuts to services in the community. We have an amendment that we'd like to attach to this Senate bill. The amendment is being drafted right now. When do we need to have it in front of this joint committee?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, Representative Kanoki, potentially as soon as tonight, but the hour does get late. I expect that Representative Ellis's prediction that we will do executive in the morning may very well be correct. I just don't want to commit to it if the amendments are all here, but I try not to not allow a person at least to present amendments if they have not yet arrived. So I, with the understanding that if we get much later than 8 a.m. in the morning on this showing up, yeah, that I guess I won't wait for it. But I would wait till morning, because we're calling in to 8 to 10 if someone has an amendment that's coming, because it's disrespectful not to consider the thoughts of people with amendments.
Thank you for the guidance.
Further questions from the committee? Seeing none, Senator Jones, would you care to close?
Mr. Chairman, members, I know we spend a lot of discussion, and there's a lot of emotion associated with folks of whether they are proponents or opponents of the private prison, and that does bring up, because the words exist in this bill and a direction for appropriation exists in the event the governor chooses to negotiate, that does cause some concerns. But as an appropriation committee, and knowing that this deal might potentially come into existence, I had no issue feeling it was appropriate that the legislature's voice spoke to what we would like to see these dollars do in the event a negotiation does occur, and try to be respectful of the negotiation with the executive. If you look at that section of Core Civic, dictated half, or probably less than half, because I'm going to assume the deal will be north of $30 million, but we dictated only a portion go towards the fire fund. We tried to, and I believe it may ultimately end up being the concern I have with some of the amendments that are coming. We tried to make suggestions on where we thought the rest would go, but we certainly had no mandate, because it seemed wrong to dictate everything on a deal that had yet to happen. So, one, that was done with thought. The unwind, everyone talks about 17-7-140 and it could automatically be unwind. That's true. Anything that the executive under 17-7-140 wound up, they can unwind. But there's also no requirement of any unwind, not a penny. It could have been all left in the ending fund. Nothing says there would be an unwind in any manner at all. This bill says 50% of what comes in unwinds. 50%. It creates a certainty to an unwind. Now there's discussion as whether the unwind would be in the appropriate area. All folks have a preference. Some would prefer it all in health and human services. Others might prefer different areas. This one says, look, if you took the cut, you get to unwind, and you get to unwind by your relative percentage. Because while it might be very, very crucial to one group that the unwind go in a certain area, it certainly is equally as crucial to a different group. You know, interestingly, one of the areas that is very important to me is schools. Those that know me know I've spent a lot of time working with schools and trying to do a good job with schools. But I actually didn't unwind any of that area of the building projects and stuff there, because I felt that potentially other areas, we just unwind, we unwind those areas that Department of Health and Human Services put up, those areas that the legislature put up. We unwinded the agencies evenly. Didn't rebuild the transfers, I let the transfers hold. So there was thoughts put into all areas of this bill. And ultimately, it does provide an option. I would see the governor taking this core civic as a favorable. He may see it as unfavorable. In the event he takes it, I believe it offers some incentives. In the event he chooses not to take it, it offers a pathway. That's all it does. And it operates with the mini two that we've already passed. So I would hope that when this bill comes up, we give it our due consideration. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Senator Jones. This concludes the hearing on Senate Bill 9. I understand we have to return the gavel to the House leadership and return to a brief bit of executive session before we continue on our next hearing.
Thank you, Senator Moore. Yes, we are moving quickly, and we sometimes have to backtrack a little bit. So here's what we need to do. There is one amendment where we said funds, and it should have clearly stated general fund. So we need to make sure that that's absolutely clear. So what we will do is a reconsider House Bill 2, then we'll reconsider the amendment, make it conceptual amendment to it, and then, and if everybody's okay with a conceptual, typically we don't like to do this, but we're simply adding the words general fund, replacing funds, so to make it clear. So if anyone has an objection to that, raise it now, and we'll print the amendment and bring it back down. But in this case, I think it's clear enough that we ought to be able to do it. So, and then we'll re-vote on the amendment, and then vote on House Bill 2 again as amended. Representative Brodell.
Madam Chair, I move to reconsider House Bill 2.
Question's been called. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Okay. We'll do a voice vote on that, or a roll call vote on that one. Thank you.
Representative Brodell.
Yes.
Representative McCarthy.
Yes. That was a yes, sorry.
Representative Hopkins.
Yes.
Representative Homeland.
Yes.
Representative Ryan.
Yes.
Representative Lynch. Representative Kenoki.
Yes.
Representative Cook.
Yes.
Representative Hamlet.
Yes.
Representative Peppers.
No.
Representative Bartel.
Yes.
Representative Burnett.
Yes.
Representative Cheetah.
Yes.
Representative Cuff?
Yes.
Representative Ellis?
Yeah.
Representative Woods?
Aye.
Representative Jones?
Aye.
Representative Keene? Representative Dudick?
And now we're going to which bill?
Representative Patelis?
Yes.
Representative Glim?
Yes.
Chair balance?
Yes.
17-5.
Representative Brodell.
Madam Chair, I move to reconsider House Bill Amendment House Bill 000202-E.AJJ and replace it with a conceptual change in the language, Madam Chair.
So, amendment to House Bill 2.
Yes.
Amendment number one more time.
Madam Chair, let me do that again. Okay. Madam Chair, I move to reconsider an amendment to House Bill 2. That number is HB 000202-E.AJJ and replace it with a conceptual amendment, Madam Chair.
Okay, so we'll vote first on the reconsider of the amendment.
Question. Third.
Question's been called. We'll do a roll call vote again.
Representative Brodel.
Yes.
Representative McCarthy.